Our next speaker is Dr. Lynn Abbott. And Dr. Abbott is an associate professor at the Bradley Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Virginia Polytechnic University, a.k.a. Virginia Tech. Dr. Abbott has more than 20 years of experience in the area of image analysis, and he's the co-principal investigator on an NIJ-funded project titled Establishing the Quantitative Basis for Sufficiency, Thresholds and Metrics for Friction Ridge Pattern Detail Quality, and the Foundation for a Standard. This was a grant that was it's a 2009 grant, so they're not quite, I think we just got everything, all the logistics of the grant completed probably this past February or March, so we're early into the process.
Thank you very much. Yes, primarily I'll be describing a project that we just got underway. We had our first meeting with students last January, so we're a few months underway, and so my plan is to talk about our approach, some of the philosophy we have behind our approach. And it was very interesting for me to hear the work of Tom a few minutes ago, because he talked about human visualization. I come from what we call machine vision, computer vision, much of which is motivated by this wonderful existence proof, which is what human visual systems can do, biological vision systems in general. And some things machine vision systems can do much better. They're much more patient, for example. But there are many mysteries left in terms of what human and other biological systems are capable of doing. And so the high-level objective of our project is to establish some sort of quantitative basis that can be used to develop some sort of sufficiency analysis for fingerprint image quality, friction ridge image quality. The motivation, the Daubert case provided the fundamental motivation, but in essence, what we are trying to do long-term is provide some sort of scientific measure of confidence in an examiner's decision with an emphasis on latent prints, because, after all, this is an NIJ-funded project. We are interested in and motivated by many of the APHIS work, but our goal on this particular project is to somehow come up with a way to provide that confidence measure somewhat semi-automatically, but not necessarily completely automatically. A little bit about the project team. We consider our ringleader to be the fellow on the lower left, Randy Murch, the fellow who's named and is also on the left of that picture. In that photograph, he was demonstrating to us how we could go about collecting some prints for use in our own experiments. And working with him are a couple of students and Ed Fox, who is a professor of computer science. Also in our project, Michael Schau is a well-known expert in the area of digital circuit design and testing. Let's see, Bruce Bedoli is here, he's not in this room. He's manning a station with his outside with a poster presentation that he has. Both Bruce and Randy have several decades of experience each in the FBI world, and so they bring to our project a lot of expertise on the law enforcement side. The rest of us are really computer guys who are learning from them, but bring hopefully some expertise into image analysis and matching and so forth. When I sat down to make up the talk, I said, why don't I compare what I know about the APHIS world, automatic fingerprint identification systems, versus the latent print world. When we talk about so-called clean prints, often called plain or rolled or tin print images, they often are high quality, at least relatively high quality, compared to many of the latent cases. And the reason is latent prints are inadvertent, almost by definition. So they tend to be blurred or partial. And there's been not very much work, to the extent we can determine, in analyzing such poor quality images, at least from a point of view of analysis of fingerprint quality. The APHIS systems, to the extent we can learn about them, emphasize minutiae, ridge endings, bifurcations. Whereas the experts such as places like SWIG and SWIGFAST and other sources like that constantly emphasize multiple levels, especially level one and eventually level three as well. Also, many of the commercial systems, we're told, they don't tell us details, typically use binarized images. So every pixel is either on or off, as shown by the middle image, whereas we would much prefer in my world to work with grayscale images. Each pixel is at least 8 bits or so, typically, of information. One thing that also in our discussions with experts are that the level two features alone are insufficient. And here's a contrived example, which we are told mimics reality. It's possible to find a lot of level two details which match perfectly, but when you fill in the level one details, the ridges, there's an obvious mismatch in some cases. And so we've been told there are examples like this. And so reliance on level two alone is not good if we're talking about quality in some sort of courtroom environment. And so one thing we have done in the last few months is to, well, investigate what can be done using level two minutiae. And so we are not trying to reinvent the wheel here, so we very happily adopted the NIST software, the NBIS package, which contains this procedure called MnDict, or minutiae detection. And you see the results of that on the left. If you can make them out, they're little colored squares indicating where the minutiae points sit. And then, because we are interested in grayscale approaches, we found this paper by Mayo and Maltoni, which talks about analyzing the actual ridges from a grayscale perspective in an effort to find the minutiae points. And one of our students implemented this work and came up with the dots that you see there. We ignore those false matches on the far left because there's extra work needed to identify the edges of the useful image. If we zoom in to these yellow windows and take a very careful look, there are, in fact, quite a few small discrepancies. And I don't know if my pointer works here, but here's one that sort of stands out at me. This is from the NIST software. Supposedly it's a ridge ending. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It's between two ridges. And that's more common than you might think. There's another case. Well, that, in the interest of time, our grayscale method did find a much better localization of that. Also, there's a lot of discussion in our group concerning what are called lakes. This is a lake area here. It's between two closely spaced minutiae point bifurcations, and if you carefully critique the placement there, there might be some. You might argue that there's some better placement possible. We think our placement is a little better here. And so there certainly are improvements that could be made, and no doubt the commercial world has made such improvements, but they won't give us their details. Now here's another experiment. We set one of our students onto an interesting experiment where we said, take this NIST database. It's called Special Database 27, and we're very happy to have it. It contains ground truth, as indicated by several human examiners, for approximately 200 or 300 cases. And so we picked one particular case. The human examiner, according to the database, identified 16 minutiae in the left image, 98 in the right, and from the 16 on the left came up... was able to identify 14 matches between those two images. So we said to ourselves, well, what could the automatic software do? We simply provided the left image, as messy as it is, we provided it to send it into the minutiae detection software, and it popped out with what it estimated as 500 or so minutiae. The clean image on the right, it came up with about half that number. And in this 500 on the left, this included the 14 found by the human examiner. So we said, well, let's see how good those particular 14 matches seem to be, and how can we do that quantitatively? Well, the idea that we got after looking much more closely than we ever especially wanted to at the NIST software, we found step five, which is called remove false minutia. And we ask ourselves, well, what would cause the NIST software to remove some minutia? And we found that in order to make its decision, it employs 9 different independent software filters, subroutines, and based on the results of those subroutines, it decides whether or not to delete one of those minutia points from further consideration. So we said to ourselves, if it were ever to decide to remove a point, well, it must not have been a very good point to begin with. And so why don't we investigate that a little further? Well, the student liked the idea of a straightforward task, and so the task we gave him was to consider every possible combination of those 9 independent filters. If you do the math to the power 9, 512 different on-off settings for these different minutia. Luckily, he's good at automating these things, right? He wrote a quick script, set the software running for a few days, and the underlying idea was that higher quality minutia ought to survive processing even under all these different cases of filter combinations. And these 14 matched points, as determined by the human examiner, were assessed based on whether those particular 14 points survived all these different filter on-off conditions. And it turns out that 8 of those 14 were not modified in any way by the processing, even though the NIST NBIS score associated with those points was low. And so that's the top row on that the table at the bottom. So just our intuitive idea of how these points should behave in the presence of different filtering, in this case, would say that we should give these points high scores, these particular 8 points high scores, whereas in one case, NBIS said, no, it's a low score based on image contrast and proximity of other points and so forth. And so at least in a couple of cases, we found where our initial thoughts differed from what the NBIS automatic score produced was. So that was one study. Partly based on these ideas, and also based on our interviews with some human examiners, we wanted to study ridge detection more thoroughly. And so we went back to that paper by Mayo and Maltoni, and as I said, my student implemented that approach and detected all the colorful ridges that you see on the right from the software he implemented. So taking the image on the left, he can automatically detect the ridges on the right. And if we want, we can overlay them to see how well they match the original image. And based on that, he has developed some early results. He's implemented a matching approach based on complete ridges. And so this is fairly hot off the press. Just this week, late last week, he said, here's what I've got so far. And so out of 20 ridges, out of 26 ridges he automatically detected in the left image, his software fairly quickly detected 20 correct matches in the right image. And this is using a fairly straightforward cross-correlation approach. And because of time, I won't go into great detail on that. Another area of interest deals with blurs, smears. You can use other names for this. And we are intrigued by the fact that some of this can be automated. We can synthetically do some blurring, and as soon as we can do it synthetically, we can generate lots of test cases and see how well some of these standard matching techniques will work. And so here actually is an ink print created by one of us just to show what the direction we want to go in. And so you can see progressively worse blurring from right to left in this case. Synthetically, the same kind of blurring is fairly easy to generate, and we can argue later on about how closely this blurring matches the physical ink blurring. But with a fairly simple linear filter, we can do 5, 10, 15 pixel blurring on the right. And this is as if we've just pulled the finger downward on the page. That's all it's supposed to resemble. And based on this, one of our students took the blurred images, fed them into the NIST software to see, well, how well does it produce, how well does it detect these minutia points, and then how well are matches performed. And in this particular study, in this one case, he found that up to about 7 pixel blurs or so, we were still getting very good matches. And so we found that to be a promising step. With some small amount of blur, we were getting just as good results as if there was no blur performed. And that led us into other discussions of just what could we do, not just with blur, but with partial prints. What you see here is an upside-down plastic serving tray from Kmart or Walmart or somewhere. And it's got lots of ridges on it that lead to missing points, missing areas in the ink prints you see on the right. And so one thing we're debating among ourselves now is just what could we do to handle cases like this, where there's lots of where the prints are only partial in a very dramatic way. And just the initial idea we have so far is to subdivide the image. Here we happen to show a 3x3 subdivision of the image, and as shown on the left, and then you see some of those subdivisions joined together going on the right. And the idea is to see, well, how many of these need to be joined in able to get a reasonable number of points that can be matched. And so that's there's some graphs here I'll skip because Jerry is tugging at my elbow. And so let me lead. We're also doing some work modeling the shape of the finger, some database work. Let me close with a couple of observations. We thrive on databases to the extent people can provide or organizations can provide databases with some sort of ground truth. That's absolutely invaluable to this kind of work. And so we are very happy to have the NIST database, SD27, with available for purchase to us. And so we've been making heavy use of that. On the other hand, vendors seem to have been fairly reluctant to give us any information at all. We decided we'd like to buy a live scan system. So I spent 10 minutes on Google to find out, well, what are some of the major vendors. I called them up. Well, I had my student tried to delegate, had him call them up. And one person said, well, just send me your questions in email and I'll get back to you. Well, we're still waiting for her to get back to me after I sent email, and a vice president of the company called me and said, well, we'll give you that information really soon. We're still waiting for that. The other person we got did give us information, but I can see why he was a little hesitant, because there are all kinds of unusual charges. They want to charge us $500 just to install software on our laptop, and yeah, even though I could, if I buy a very complicated software system from anywhere else, I click the mouse a couple of times and it installs somehow. I don't know why they need to do this. They claim that one of the main reasons that they need to install the software is that there are so many different standards among different enforcement agencies. And so he said, well, there's 20 different standards, and I'm not sure what the number is. But he gave as his example, agency number one wants the name as John space Doe. The other person wants the name as Doe comma John. And all these slight inconsistencies among the way data are reported gives them a great excuse to charge more for software. That's the way I see it. And so there's a bunch of references here that I relied on in doing work so far. Be happy to talk more offline.